A Conservative MP and former soldier has sparked controversy after he said he was a kind of torturer while serving in Northern Ireland in the 1970s. Colonel Bob Stewart was being interviewed by the BBC after President Donald Trump said he believed torture worked.
I wonder whether everyone listening to this programme would consider a certain amount of persuasion. I don't agree with waterboarding, but a certain amount of persuasion might be justified if someone, for example, had the knowledge about where a nuclear weapon that was going to explode in London was. That is very difficult. And that is where I suggest that people might say a certain amount of persuasion could be justified.
So not waterboarding, but what are you talking about? Sleep deprivation, slapping people?
Yeah, well, you see, before 1977, I'm older than James, but before 1977, I was actually a soldier in Northern Ireland. And there were five forbidden techniques introduced in 1977, which some of which I'd used prior to that. Spread eagling, sleep deprivation. So in a way, you know, technically, as you look at it today, I was a kind of a torturer. Of course, it was acceptable then. It's now unacceptable, and now it's defined as torture.
Commentator Charlie Wolfe with us this morning. Charlie, morning to you. Good morning, Charlie. OK, so Charlie's not there. Paul O'Connor from the Pat Finucane Centre with us this morning. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. I'm here.
Good morning. Good. Paul, what do you make of this?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. I mean, I'm slightly confused by the interview, for a start, because he says in it, and maybe he's confused, that the methods were reintroduced in 1977 in the clip that you've just played. Now, if that were the case, then when the British Attorney General went to Strasbourg before 77 and promised that the methods would never again be used, then that clearly wasn't the truth. But maybe Bob Stewart's mixed up about his timeline. I don't know. I think people need to follow that one up. I'm not quite sure what it means to be sort of a torturer. It sounds like sort of being pregnant or whatever. I don't quite get that. One thing is quite clear. Torture is illegal. I also believe it's immoral, it's counterproductive, and I think the recent debate over the last few days because of Trump's comments are very alarming. I think they will have sent a shockwave throughout the world in terms of a presidency.
Look, I get the argument if someone is innocent and does not have information, that what torture can do is it can just force a human being to say anything to make the pain stop. So I get that, right? But what about those people who do have information? Does the body not have an actual threshold beyond which they will give that information up?
Well, here's the thing. I actually get very angry when I hear people coming up with a hypothetical argument. And we've heard that a lot from the Israeli army. You know, the hypothetical argument that there's a bomb somewhere. The authorities don't know where the bomb is, but the bomber does. And so Bob Stewart talks about the nuclear bomb in London, which is, you know, an interesting discussion in an ethics class in a university. I haven't heard of a single example of where that's happened anywhere in the world. But let's take a real example. The director of Reprieve, Clive Stafford-Smith, was on RTE radio this morning, and he talked about one of his clients who's in Guantanamo Bay, who, while being tortured, he was a senior member of Al-Qaeda, while he was being tortured, said that there were links between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. That led to the Iraq War. It led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. We're still feeling the effects of it. The information was completely false, but the information was given by this individual because he was being tortured by the CIA, and he would do anything to stop the torture. That's the counter-argument.
Well, that's the counter-argument, but to come back to my point, Paul, we also know that many possible terrorist atrocities have been stopped because the security forces, by whatever means, have got information.
We don't know that they've been stopped by torture, Steve. What we do know is that torture does bring out false information from those that are being tortured. Leaving aside the moral aspect.
And I get that, but what about those circumstances where there is a terrorist and that terrorist does have information, and if the security services get that information, lives will be saved?
Well, lives are actually lost through torture. Now, I'll explain why I'm saying that, Stephen. I would argue that the images from Abu Ghraib, the information that came out about what was happening in the black sites around the world, the information that came out about what was happening at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, led thousands of young men to go off and become bombers. Torture by the CIA and others, and at times with the complicity of the British security services, radicalized an entire generation around the world. They led to lives being lost. Torture in the long run only brings discredit on those who carry it out, and it leaves a legacy for generations of hatred and so, people being radicalized and say, right, I am going to go and I'm going to join organizations and I'm going to kill and murder people.
And I'm hearing all of those arguments, and they're valid, logical points. But for a terrorist who does have information, do you think torture would bring that information out of them?
I believe that the many, many military people and people within security services who say that torture does not work are correct. And there's voices on both sides of the Atlantic. There's people that have worked, and even within the British security services, within the American security services worldwide, who would say that torture actually doesn't work.
Well, look,
you can never, this is the key point, Stephen, you can never rely on information that has been given because you're inflicting serious mental and physical pain on a human being. You can never rely on what they're saying because they will say literally anything to save their lives, which is why we had a war in Iraq.
Bob Irish, security analyst, former intelligence officer. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I think it's interesting. We seem to have, I won't even give you my opinion at the moment, I'll just define the arguments before us. We have two schools of thought, both professional and unprofessional people. One school says torture doesn't work. The other school says torture does work. And then we have an additional issue in this debate, and that is, what do we mean when we use the word torture? Everyone has in their own mind what they believe torture means. Some people believe it's a medieval executioner with a black leather mask in a dungeon putting hot tongs to someone. Other people believe torture can be nothing more than playing mind games with an individual. And somewhere in this spectrum is where people believe torture begins. For example, under one definition of torture, which is to give mental anguish or mental stress to someone, putting a person who has claustrophobia into a prison cell would be viewed as torture. In the United States, when they move a prisoner from one high-security prison to another, he is put in handcuffs and leg irons. That's the way he's moved in transit. The UK believes putting a person in leg irons is torture.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about in this discussion, are we? We're talking about the extreme methods of pressure on a human being.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. What is an extreme method if you're using psychological stress as the term you want to talk about? How do you define what is an extreme method of causing a person psychological disturbance? I gave an example, put him in a cell. If you put me in a cell, I wouldn't like it, but it wouldn't be extreme stress. However, that is the definition of torture.
Okay, let's see what we think this morning. Jimmy, morning, Jimmy.
Hi, Stephen. How are you this morning?
So, I'm doing all right, thank you. Interesting discussion this, given one of the most powerful people in the world believes waterboarding would work. Waterboarding, of course, is when water is forced up a human being's nose, basically, isn't it? And it feels like it's gone into the brain. It often gives a sensation of very close to death for these people, like they're drowning. The president supports it.
If it had started 40 years ago in this country, there would have been less deaths, maybe. But my comment
is, why do you say that?
Well, listen, my comment is that there's a guy there.
Sorry, no, let's look at past your first comment. Why do you say that?
Well, if there was a lot of people, say, during internment, Republicans, who received maybe some treatment, maybe would have thought twice about it whenever they got released, for a start. But listen, I have heard over the last few days comments made by people from the Pat Finnegan Centre. Okay? Now, how can the people from the Pat Finnegan Centre come out and say the stuff that they have, when over the years they've spoken on behalf of people that have been involved in things that make torture look like a kid's game.
Paul O'Connor, do you want to respond to this?
How does the Patson and Center's argument stand
up? Well, let's
up?
Let Paul O'Connor respond immediately.
Well, I'm kind of surprised, Stephen, because this morning is the first time we've spoken on this subject for several months, so I'm not quite sure what the listener's referring to.
What kind of people have you spoke on behalf of? People that has made torture look like a kid's Christmas game. People, you know, the Pat Finucane Centre over the years have spoke for people that have blew children out of prams.
Hold on, Paul. Paul, do you want to respond to this?
Well, I think this is rubbish, Stephen. I don't really get the point.
Oh, no, it's not rubbish. How many times have you had the Pat Finucane Centre?
We have always...
Hold on. Go on, Paul.
On behalf of families who've been bereaved through the troubles, we will continue to do that in the future. I haven't a clue where your caller is
okay.
coming from, Stephen.
All right. And Hold on, Jimmy. Brandon Lambeg. Morning, Bran.
Morning, Stephen. First of all, in relation to Trump coming out with that nonsense about...
And by the way, the Pat Finucane Centre, as Paul O'Connor just said, they are speaking on behalf of bereaved families. That's their role. That's what they're doing. Not what the caller just suggested. Go ahead, Bran.
Right, Stephen. In relation to Trump, he's doing that as a soundbite to take everybody's attention off the fact he's depleting access to women's rights. He's disregarding the Native American people, their rights. And this is what the press is doing. The press are just going on a whirlwind. Oh, Trump says this, Trump says that. They should really start concentrating on what Trump isn't saying and what he's doing behind the scenes. In relation to Northern Ireland, we all know what the English did to our people in Northern Ireland over the period of the Troubles. It's not going to change anything, us talking about it now. All we need to do is concentrate on the future. If we have got evidence to take them to court, take them to court. Listening to a babbling idiot like Bob Stewart, it's just nonsense. It really is nonsense. And it's sickening because it's just constantly bringing up the past in Northern Ireland.
Do you believe torture can work in certain circumstances?
What stage do you think I said that, Stephen?
I'm asking you, do you believe? Do you believe?
No, it doesn't.
That's what
it
we're talking
work.
About today.
Yeah, and we're talking about people promoting torture. We're not talking about whether torture works or not. We all know torture really does not work. More innocent people will admit to anything if they're being tortured. At what stage do you decide a person's innocent or they aren't innocent? Or at what stage does the torturer say, no, he's just being tough, we'll break him?
Would you have tortured, for example, I don't know, if Osama bin Laden had been captured, would you have tortured him?
Tortured him for what?
Information?
To tell you the plans?
Information? Information? Plans?
Information? Right. It's like this, Stephen. If Osama bin Laden was captured, do you not think that all his underlings would automatically change everything they had arranged? Do you think that they would actually say, oh, let's keep doing it because Osama's not going to give all the information out? They would know that if a person is captured and is going to be tortured, their plans will need to be changed. So what benefit? If they can torture him and break him within 24 hours, maybe. But if a person holds out any longer than that, the information they're going to give is worthless.
Well, you see, it's interesting where you've got to now. So you've got to the stage in the last sentence there. And Brian, I'm not trying to trap you, but essentially what you've said there is that if it would be effective, you would support it, maybe.
No, I did not say it would be effective.
Well, you said that maybe within 24 hours. So you're actually, judging your morality based on the effectiveness of it.
No, if you let me actually speak, Stephen, instead of just continuing your tirade. What I said was that unless this information could somehow be got within 24 hours, in all reality, it's useless. In fact, it's probably useless within 5 hours.
Yeah, but if it's got within 24 hours,
people
then...
People are going to move there. They're not going to sit around. If the head of the snake is captured,
yes,
they're going to change their plans because they know if there's a risk of torture, they're going to change. Now, with that arrest and with that risk of torture, what other information that the authorities have gained through intelligence is going to be totally wasted because the plans by the culprits is going to change immediately.
Okay, Bran, thank you. Good call this morning, 03030 80 55 55. Bob Ayres?
Well, let's use the the example of Osama bin Laden we were just talking about. If bin Laden is captured and tortured, granted, his fellow terrorists may change their plans, they may move house, they may throw away their cell phones, but they can't throw away their identity. If Osama bin Laden names the other terrorists, they now become targets to try to identify and apprehend. So they use one example and says if you torture a person, it's useless because they'll change their plans. You can use another example that says torture him, find out who his compatriots are, and go after his compatriots. Putting a person into interrogation is a science. You don't take, for example, a private that you've arrested on the Russian front during World War II, a Russian private, and try to torture him into telling you what the plans of the Soviet high command are for an invasion 3 months in the future, because it will be well beyond the scope of knowledge of the individual that you're interrogating. If you've got a field marshal you're interrogating, he may know. So the first thing you have to do when you're interrogating somebody is to understand what the scope of knowledge of your subject is likely to be, and tailor your interrogation to that scope of knowledge.
Let's listen to more of what Colonel Bob Stewart said.
You have to think very carefully about what pressure you can put on people in order to give that information to stop people's lives being lost.
So what sort of torture?
Well, again, that's difficult. Sleep deprivation, lack of food, perhaps, as I've done, showing people pictures of their friends that have been blown up.
030-30-80-55-55, Seamus and Derry. Morning, Seamus.
Good morning. I just think it's a sad week for justice. First of all, you have the British Parliament coming out and looking for British soldiers to give off for murders and stuff. Then you have Trump coming on and saying that we should have torture. I'm just wondering how long it'll be before we have gas chambers and concentration camps here again.
So develop your argument.
Well, how can you say that torture is something, it's not a right thing to do? If an American soldier was captured in Afghanistan and tortured, it would be wrong. But if an Afghanistani was captured and taken to Guantanamo Bay, it's not wrong. We have prisoners here in the north of Ireland, Republican prisoners who are being tortured every day. And I think we should be looking closer to home at the torture.
There's no evidence for that, is there?
Sorry?
There's no evidence for that whatsoever.
Well, there is evidence of it.
Evidence of Republican prisoners being tortured? In what way?
Continually getting beaten. If you look at Tony Taylor, whose wife is going through psychological pressure from the British government, you know, she's not been allowed up to visit her husband at times because of...
Yeah, but what we're talking about is physical torture here. And obviously the details of that individual case.
Well, beating is
a
torture. Beating someone is torturing them.
Seamus, thank you.
To get back to the point of Donald Trump, an American soldier tortured, that would be wrong. But if an Afghani was taking the American torture, that would be right. That's what seems to be here.
It's a really interesting conversation, this.
But my point, again, being, are we going to expect concentration camps and gas chambers next?
Seamus, thank you. Paul O'Connor from the Pat Finucane Centre. The likes of sleep deprivation or playing loud noise that does not leave any physical long-term... Well, I was going to say it doesn't leave physical long-term effects. Actually, if you deprive someone of sleep or torture them with noise on a constant basis, presumably it would, actually. I'm second-guessing myself.
Stephen,
I have no idea.
Obviously, there's a case went to the European Commission and then went to the European Court of Human Rights, and that is currently back before the courts of the hooded men, and those were some of the methods that were being used. We've talked to other people recently, very, very recently, who were tortured, and I use the word, I'm very clear about the word that I'm using, and I'm using the word tortured. The effects of that have lasted generations, they've lasted decades, and those people have been left with a post-traumatic stress, and their families and their friends have all suffered the effects of it. We are talking about torture, and if we talk, I presume our other contributor this morning, I hope he's never been tortured. John McCain, Senator John McCain in the US, has been tortured by the North Vietnamese, and he is one of the foremost advocates against waterboarding and torture, because he says it's not only counterproductive and it's not only immoral and illegal, it also reflects back on those that are carrying out the torture, it reflects back on the USA itself. Britain did not benefit from what happened to the hooded men here, contrary to what one of your first contributors did this morning. It actually sullied the name of Britain worldwide because they were involved in torture in Ballykelly and elsewhere. Torture never benefits the country that is carrying it out. It's always wrong, and under Article 3 of the European Convention, it's illegal. So this discussion, you know, whatever Trump is saying, it's illegal within Europe, and that has nothing to do with the EU. That's the European Convention, which is outside of
it. And the hooded men who you referred to, they claim that they were subjected to food and sleep deprivation.
No, they don't claim that. The British government admits that they were that all of these five techniques were used, including a sixth technique, which was serious physical ill treatment. The British government has never disputed that this happened. What they disputed is that there was any government involvement in that. They basically put it down to the police officers or the soldiers who carried it out.
Okay.
The evidence that's more recently emerged would dispute that and say that there was actual ministerial involvement in what happened. So it's not what the men allege. That did actually happen, and that was accepted.
Okay, here's David in Lisburn. Morning, David.
How you doing, Stephen? I have a bit of a different take on this, where I think actually there's a bit of absolutism going on here where torture is always wrong, or I think we're missing a bit of nuance. There can be circumstances where torture is the most moral action to do, but only if you know that the person being tortured has the information you need. So a common hypothetical is, say, a child abductor has a child. You have corroborating evidence as well as a confession, but he will not tell you where the child is. That child will die unless you get the information by hook or by crook, whatever means. The most moral thing to do in that situation is whatever it takes to save that child's life. So I think we're just this absolutism of it's always wrong, and you know these absolute statements, just we're missing a bit of nuance here. Torturing people, just fishing for information, I wonder, does he know this, does he not? Then no, then that I think that's immoral. But once you know the person you have has information that will save lives, and they're purposely, willingly withholding it, then I think then it can be justified morally. It can be the most moral action.
So no matter what, would you go anywhere to save that child's life, Paul? Sorry, David. So would you pull that abductor's fingernails out to get the information?
Yes, but because
would you castrate them without anaesthetic to get that information? Where's the line? Is there a line?
No, not when it comes to an innocent life and a person you know is guilty and purposely.
Don't you think that if we don't have any baseline in our society, that this no matter what attitude means that's an incredibly slippery slope?
No, the baseline is we have concrete evidence. We know for a fact that this person has information that can save another life or lives and is purposely withholding it. Not only that, this person is responsible for these other lives. In other words, he is the one that is going to, you know, say that in this case of the child abductor, he has taken away their freedom, their rights, and has maybe tortured them or whatever. So you're trying to save an innocent by at the expense of a guilty, a known guilty. So therefore, it is the most moral thing to do in that situation.
Paul O'Connor?
No, I don't agree. I think once you cross the threshold, Stephen, or David, I think then you've gone down a slippery slope to hell.
So you let the child die rather than torture the abductor?
Look, there are countries that routinely torture people, that routinely torture their own prisoners. It's routine in Syria, it was routine under Saddam, it happens in Pakistan and in many, many other countries. It doesn't bring about the rule of law.
But in David's specific example, right, hypothetical example, so let's develop that a little. So you've got video footage of a known child sex offender picking a child up, putting that child into a car, taking that child away somewhere. The known child sex offender is apprehended and admits to picking up the child, but says he's not yielding where that child is.
Yeah, I understand your point.
So what would you would not point. Torture that yeah, person no. to save that child? You wouldn't do it.
No, I understand the point.
Well, then, Paul, you are morally complicit in that child's death. Well, are you willing to accept that?
Okay, that's your point of view. I think once you cross the threshold and you go down that slippery slope, you're giving permission to people to inflict extreme pain on other people, and
in that very certain specific slippery justified circumstances.
It doesn't work.
It does. Okay. All right. Well, again, I think the new, again, this absolute position, absolutism in any position, is, you know, often falls into these pitfalls. And
well, it's also
I think we are missing the nuance.
Law, here. David. That's why the law has been written the way it has. The law is quite clear. The shortest convention in the European Convention on Human Rights is the prohibition on torture, Article 3. It's the shortest because it's saying it is an absolutist permit.
I'm not disputing the law. I'm talking about a moral argument here. Okay, I've made a moral argument, not a legal argument. Now, morals can inform the law, and I understand that the law at the minute does not permit it. But that doesn't mean I agree with the law, absolutely. I think we're missing nuance from the law.
Okay.
Okay, so my argument's not a legal argument, it's a moral argument.